The Hamlet Podcast, Episode 15. Hello and welcome to this exploration of Shakespeare's King Lear with me, your host, Conor Hanratty. We ended last time on the brink of another soliloquy from Edmund, gloating in his success, having so easily manipulated his father and turned him against his brother. And here it is. This is the excellent foppery of the world, that when we are sick in fortune, often the surfeit of our own behaviour, we make guilty of our disasters the sun, the moon, and the stars, as if we were villains by necessity, fools by heavenly compulsion, knaves, thieves, and treachers by spherical predominance, drunkards, liars, and adulterers by an enforced obedience of planetary influence, and all that we are evil in by a divine thrusting on, an admirable evasion of whoremaster man to lay his goatish disposition to the charge of a star. My father compounded with my mother under the dragon's tail, and my nativity was under Ursa Major, so that it follows, I am rough and lecherous. Tut, I should have been that I am, had the maidenliest star in the firmament twinkled on my bastardizing. Edgar! And pat he comes, like the catastrophe of the old comedy. My cue is villainous melancholy, with a sigh like Tom O'Bedlam. Oh, these eclipses do portend, these divisions. Fa sol la mi. Here, Edmund is contradicting Gloucester's speech from last time. Gloucester drew attention to a recent eclipse as an explanation of all the strange inversions happening in Lear's kingdom and his court. Now, Edmund says such explanations are nonsense. Before Gloucester had arrived, Edmund had been mocking fops, or fools, conceived in stale beds. Stupidity and fornication are still very present here, as we will see. He mocks his father's stupidity, calling it the excellent foppery of the world. What an amazingly idiotic way for the world to think, he's saying. It is foppery, or foolishness, to make guilty of our disasters the sun, the moon, and the stars, when we are sick in fortune. This is an attack on almost all astrology, but particularly the notion that an eclipse will have so much influence. Edmund gets the dig in early. When things aren't going our way, or we are sick in fortune, we can't go blaming the sun, moon, and stars when our fate is, as he puts it, often the surfeit of our own behaviour. Or, to paraphrase Shakespeare's other great line from Julius Caesar, the fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves. Edmund continues, bemused at the stupidity of thinking that everything is written for us in the heavens, that we are villains by necessity, fools by heavenly compulsion, knaves, thieves, and treachers, or traitors, by spherical predominance, drunkards, liars, and adulterers by an enforced obedience of planetary influence. He's using quite exaggerated language here, as though quoting the explanations one might hear from an astrologer, eagerly charting the pull of the stars. Heavenly compulsion, spherical predominance, planetary influence. The skies, the spheres, the planets, all exerting their influence and leaving us powerless to resist our fates. As though, Edmund scoffs, all that we are evil in is happening as a result of a divine thrusting on. He switches here from that pseudo-scientific language into a considerably coarser tone, from planetary influence to divine or heavenly thrusting. He's quite literally bringing the conversation back to Earth. Very earthly indeed. He quips that it is an admirable evasion of whoremaster man to lay his goatish disposition to the charge of a star. This is amazingly rich language, in which he's amused at how sex-crazed men can so readily blame their lecherous and horny behaviours and attitudes on the stars. The charge, or responsibility, is astrologically explained by the influence of astral and planetary alignment. Edmund jokes that this being the case, he is rough and lecherous because his parents conceived him under the dragon's tail, and then he was born under Ursa Major, the sign of the Great Bear. Nowadays, this constellation is as commonly known as the Plough or the Big Dipper, but it's the same group of stars in the sky. The dragon's tail, more obscurely, is something to do with lunar nodes and makes Edmund look more of an expert than he might be letting on. There is apparently a satanic or evil association to the dragon's tail, but I couldn't find anything reliable to tell me more about that. Edmund continues, "Tut, I should have been that I am, had the maidenliest star in the firmament twinkled on my bastardizing." And this is really his point. He would have been himself, or made himself, himself, regardless of where he was conceived or born. But he seems to relish the description of the maidenliest star in the firmament twinkling over his bastardizing. Sex again. Edmund is earthy, and has no interest in the stars. He's no interest in destiny being foretold, because he's going to make his own. No matter how concerned his father is with such astrological information, he doesn't give a damn. But whatever about his father, Edmund is now on the brink of describing Edgar. But before he can say anything more than his name, the man himself appears. Edmund has been playing the puppet master, or stage manager, already. He's arranged his props and manipulated his father, and now he speaks to us and describes how he'll play his next scene with his brother. And pat, he comes like the catastrophe of the old comedy. My cue is villainous melancholy, with a sigh like Tom of Bedlam. Edmund announces his brother's entrance. Pat, he comes like the catastrophe of the old comedy. I don't know how old a comedy Shakespeare is describing here, but this is a tantalising little glimpse. Might he mean Greek comedy? We know that Shakespeare knew Roman comedies like Terence and Plautus, although these are the children of the Greek form known, stay with me, as new comedy. Old comedy basically means plays by the likes of Aristophanes. But can there have been any shred of Aristophanes in Shakespeare's education? I wonder about it mainly because he uses this curious Greek word, catastrophe, here. To us today, a catastrophe is a disaster, a very serious downturn. But a substantial semantic shift has happened over the centuries. Originally, a catastrophe was a denouement, or the big conclusion of a play when a major plot point was resolved. Edmund sounds very ironic here, describing his brother's first entrance onto the stage as the grand finale. He also describes how he himself is going to behave. His cue is, as he puts it, to put on a villainous melancholy, with a sigh like Tom of Bedlam. Now, this Tom of Bedlam was a name assumed by beggars, describing themselves as having escaped from Bedlam, or St. Mary of Bethlehem Hospital, a notorious asylum for the insane. Our word bedlam, used to describe a scene of chaos or mayhem, comes from this contraction of Bethlehem. So, Edmund is going to put on a particularly sad face and sigh terribly. And we assume he does so. He seems almost to quote his father now, saying, "Oh, these eclipses do portend these divisions." A curious thread running through the play is the idea of music and harmony. We had a little bit of this back in Macbeth, but here it seems to have quite a major thematic role. Divisions, discord, and lack of harmony in the kingdom will be described quite often in terms of music, as much as they are in terms of politics. Forcing this point, Edmund ends his speech with a few jangled notes, which he probably sings, although I'm not going to. Fa, sol, la, and mi. Any of you that have seen The Sound of Music will recognise these as the names of notes on the scale, but Edmund isn't singing them in the usual order. Far more meticulous readers have actually spotted that these notes make up an augmented fourth, a particularly dissonant, restless musical interval. It's got the reputation of being the devil's chord, or diabolus in musica. Don't be fooled by drama queens on the internet who will proclaim that this was banned in the Middle Ages and could lead to excommunication or even death. There are a great many examples of this chord in medieval and Renaissance music, but it is aggressive and dramatic, and nowadays you'll possibly recognize it as the interval between the two tones of most ambulance and fire engine sirens. Perhaps Edmund is using it to show just how much discord he is going to achieve. Depending on the size of the set and its design, Edgar has been entering for quite a long time by now. But we'll hold off, pat, and let him enter properly in the next episode. Thank you so much for listening and for all your lovely emails. It's always a pleasure to hear from you all over the world. I hope you're very well, and I'll speak to you next time.